Hello, everybody. Welcome back in to our Aces Up the Sleeve podcast. It's been a hot minute. It's not our usual Wednesday recording, but happy Wednesday to everybody anyway. Maybe it does get posted on Wednesday. Maybe I'll buck the trend. But
Surely. Do it on Wednesday. Let's get back in the groove. We have dropped the ball. It's been, Patty's got a lot going on in her own situation. We'll dive into all that later. Don't want to spill those beans until Patty's ready to spill them. I've had a lot going on here with myself and with the stable. So we admittedly we have not been getting the podcast out like we like to. We've done some more video recordings lately. We're trying to do more of those as well. And just, as we're still kind of figuring out how this new media, Pocket Aces media empire is going to work, we're still kind of trying to figure out how everything fits in and work it all into our schedules with everything else that we got going on. But hopefully back on track to get that podcast out at least every other week. And get some more videos coming out, which I'll be recording videos as soon as we wrap up this podcast recording. So sorry for the long absence, but we are hopefully going to get back at it and be getting this out on a regular basis.
Yep. Well, we figured what good way to come back to our to the first medium, because the audio podcast was the first our first kind of jump into this growing media empire. But we figured what way to get back into it than to recap the last weekend of racing, because our racing fans know, our partners know, maybe some of our casual, maybe first time listeners don't know, but for those of you who aren't in the know, this past weekend was a bunch of classic races, the 3-year-old spring classics, including the Kentucky Derby, the Kentucky Oaks, and their equivalent overseas in England in Newmarket, which was the 1,000 and 2,000 guineas. And I think I'm pretty sure it's correct, because I've seen a lot of outlets saying this, but for the first time ever in history, a single owner won all four of the spring classics this past weekend. And that is, it is hard to quantify how incredibly difficult and rare it is, to the point where even the ownership group was saying, we will most likely never do this again. So it's an incredible accomplishment to win one of these. It is unheard of, quite literally, to have done all four. And that is what Godolphin did when they won the Kentucky Derby with Sovereignty. They won the Kentucky Oaks with Good Cheer. And then over in England, they won the 1,000 Guineas, which is the filly version of their classics, with Desert Flower. And then they won the 2,000 Guineas with, where is he? I think it's Rule of Order? Ruling Court. There we go. Yep, 24 hours later, after Ruling Court won the 2,000 Guineas, they won the 1,000 Guineas with Desert Flower. And all of that in the span of 3 days, I think. So that's wild. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's a testament to their organization. I mean, Lord knows they have spent the money, and they have been trying to win the Derby for a long, long time. And Sheikh Mohammed has pumped in, just crazy, crazy, crazy amounts of money into this sport, into his operations here in the United States, into his operations all around the world. And, yes, they've done an amazing, amazing thing. And the fact that it's taken them as long as it has to win the Derby, just tells, despite the financial resources and the number of horses that they've purchased and bred, with the Derby in mind, it's amazing that it took them as long as it did. And then to have it happen, with culminating this incredible 3-day run of these four victories, it's phenomenal. It's I wish, and I'm guilty of this, as we talked before we started recording today, I know so little about the European racing, but it's a shame that more of the casual US fans didn't get to see those races that happened overseas, because just for that four race stretch, it's just an incredible accomplishment that has taken years and years and years and more money than the gross domestic product of probably half the countries in the world.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just, they've earned it. You know, I don't typically say people earn things, because I think more often than not, you know, a lot of times people luck into things and they're in the right place at the right time. But sure enough, the Godolphin team, they've earned this because they've been working at it for a long, long, mm-hmm. long time.
Well, and I think to your point as well, the fact that I think the audience is there. I think a lot of it is we just have to figure out how to present some of these races to folks. Because I was looking at an article earlier on the TDN that said that the Kentucky Derby coverage this year through NBC and their streaming platform Peacock, or it's like a multi-purpose thing, but it's the most watched programming service since the 1989 Kentucky Derby. So
yeah, I mean,
people are here. Showed,
yeah, you know, it was interesting because, you know, they did not get the ratings they'd hoped for on Oaks Day and the handle that they'd hoped for on Oaks Day, but then they get the best ratings and great handle, you know, for the Derby. So, you know, racing, you know, despite many people saying so, you know, racing's not dead yet, and there's still plenty of interest and still plenty of fans out there. You know, Dave Brown sent me a text earlier this morning about somebody that had texted him saying, "Hey, okay, I'm ready to get into ownership now." And
nice.
Telling him that, you know, we probably had, you know, 50, 60 people sign up for our email list mm-hmm. over the last couple of days. You know, I guess since about Wednesday, so the last 5 days or so. And, you know, it just shows that there's still a tremendous amount of interest in this sport, and you know, for good reason. The horses are they're majestic, glorious animals, and doing what they love to do. And we got some really good racing over these past mm-hmm. few days to prove it. And it just man, some of those races on Saturday were, you know, the Turf Classic was just wow.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it was nothing, and I tell people all the time, I'm like, there's nothing better than having, than the turf races that come down to the wire, seemingly. And mm-hmm. and it seems like a lot of the races, not only on Derby Day, but also on Oaks Day, a lot of those races got very, very close. Like, sometimes, you know, you have a couple races where it's, oh, 2-3 lengths ahead, and it's fine, it's glorious. But it's like, there were some where four horses, like the top four, were decided by all of maybe a neck. And it's mm-hmm. just one behind the other. And I actually thought about it. I was like, I do not envy the stewards right now. Like, that is a high-stress job, man.
Yeah, but it, like I said, it made for some great racing mm-hmm. all weekend, and you know, it's hats off to Bill Mott and Junior Alvarado.
Who's a good friend of the podcast.
Good friend of the podcast, absolutely. And I was thrilled for Junior. You know, I had some clients out. We had some partners out on Saturday morning to the farm to see Silver Talisman at the Thoroughbred Center, not the farm. And they're asking me what I thought about the race. And you know, it just set up. It's set up so perfectly for closers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they because they weren't really able to get the track completely sealed before the rain came in on Friday.
Yep.
And then I think also because it continued to rain all day on Saturday, yeah. you know, and the Derby started, you know, went to the post after 7 o'clock, that it just, you know, you knew that there weren't going to be a lot of, that the speed was going to struggle to hold because they weren't going to be skipping over that water on a sealed track. It was going to be pretty muddy and sloppy and slow and gross by the time Derby came around, and that's just how it played out. There was so much speed in the race. You know, I knew, I told them that morning, you know, if one of them get out there on its own, then maybe it can run away with it. But I don't think it's going to play out that way. And sure enough, you know, there were five horses going relatively fast for the conditions. And they just all, you know, they all kind of fell apart at the end. And it set up perfectly for the closers. And what I told them that morning is, you know, it's going to be closers. It's just going to depend on, you know, which closer finishes best. Is it going to be Sovereignty or is it going to be Journalism? And I gave the nod to Sovereignty just because I felt like he'd been running in some bigger fields and had a good Tomlinson number, and I just thought that experience running behind bigger fields might suit him a little bit better. And whether or not that's what did it or he's just a better horse, I don't know, but it definitely it was a thrilling race. And then Baeza to come out of the clouds and almost get up there was just
from post 21.
It was just a great run. I had him. I put money across the board on Sovereignty about 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon when he was 10-1, and I thought, this is just juicy. I can't believe it. There's no way it's going to stay there. And then again, when he was 9-1, about 2 minutes before they went into the gate, I had to go put some more money across the board on him because I still couldn't believe it. And then,
so what I'm hearing is Christmas bonus for Patty.
what happens is, you know, the big either. I'm guessing it was a computer batch dropped because, you know, he went from when they're literally going into the gate, he's 9-1. And when the doors open, he's 7-1. So whether it was a computer batch that dropped on him or somebody just came in and dropped a large seven figure bet. Something definitely changed the odds there later.
It was probably it was probably one of those computer assisted wagering things. Cause there's been a lot of stink about those lately about how they drop at the last second and you think you're getting a price. And then, you know, your horse goes from 4-1 to, you know, 6-5 favorite. And you're like, what is this?
But to move the Derby pool that much that late,
that was massive.
That was a big number. Yeah. And but hey, hell, you can't complain about 7-1.
I know.
So it's a great race. So happy for Junior, and I loved watching him and his family celebrate afterwards. And Phil Mott seems like he is just he's one of those guys that's just class act all the way around. So it was good to see.
Well, and it, you know, for at least in the editorial community, not the horse journalism, but the actual people journalism community, it was a pretty well-known thing that Junior had gotten pretty badly hurt when one of his mounts unfortunately had a cardiac event and passed away, and then the horse fell on him. So it was pretty well known. You know, and Junior said it several times that he was so stressed. He was trying to get healthy, and he was so afraid that he was going to lose this mount because everything in him said, this is my Derby horse. This is going to be the horse that gets me over that hill, that wins this race that I've been dreaming about since I lived in Venezuela. And this, you know, and this was the only race that my family could watch. And the fact that Bill called him, you know, when he got out of the hospital and said, you do what you need to do. And you heal, and then when you get back, we'll put you back on this horse. Yeah. I'm like, and it's so nice to see in the time where it's like, it is not unusual to see, you know, the longtime riders who carry this horse through the Triple Crown Trail. They accumulated all these points for these owners, and then they get swapped for a nation's leading rider for the first time in the Derby, and then they finish, you know, 17th, 18th, 19th, because, I mean, and nothing against this leading rider. They're a leading rider for a reason, but they don't know this horse. Right. Or it's a giant, massive stretch of 20 horses. Anything happens in the Derby. And this jockey, this, you know, the one who has been loyal and has carried this horse through the Derby trail kind of has to sit out on the biggest stage. And it's like that always kind of just chaps my hide when I see that, because I'm like, what was the point? Like, I get it. I get wanting to give your horse the best chance to win, but for me at least, on the outside looking in, I would rather have someone who knows this horse like the back of their hand, especially in a race like the Derby, where it is a madhouse. It's a zoo. People have called it as such.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously Mott and Alvarado combination has been extremely successful. They went a lot of races together. I was most excited. You know, that didn't surprise me at all when Junior got that mount back after coming back from injury. It was great to see, but again, I fully expected it just because of their history together. The one I was most excited to see, honestly, was that Luan got to ride Final Gambit.
Yes,
and got a nice fourth place finish.
Yeah, he was flying. He was flying.
So, you know, I think that was good to see, and you know, obviously for Brendan and Ethan, who we know so well, and had horses in. We knew East Avenue was going to be up against it. He was one of those speed horses.
Yeah.
And
Ethan ran ninth, didn't he?
He ran very nice, decent race. You know, ninth. I think it was ninth. And we talked to Ethan before the race, and he was like, I think it's on Thursday maybe. And he said, he felt like he had was going to have a decent chance because the horse was so flexible and versatile. Yeah. And he can close, he can be close to the lead, yeah. He can do a little bit of everything. And, the question was just going to be the dirt. And, he trained on it really well in the weeks leading up. But, just in the conditions, certainly nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, that's a good, solid finish.
I'm saying ninth place on your first ever Derby starter. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at,
Absolutely.
Really so good. But yeah, let's just swap over to the Oaks kind of really quickly. Mm-hmm. That was another one where, it was Godolphin. And this one was a little different. I think this one, everybody kind of expected her to win because Good Cheer went into this race. She was undefeated. She just kind of just kept showing up, kept improving, kept proving that she was the class, essentially, of her generation. And that's essentially how it played out. It's like when she took over at the top of the stretch, like when she got going, she was gone. And
I mean, it was a race that was never really, it was never in doubt. I never even gave any serious consideration to any other horse in the field, quite frankly. It was just a matter of, to me, how much was she going to win by? And it was a nice, easy ride. She didn't have to work that hard, and she wins by a little over two lengths, and it was just she's head and shoulders above the rest right now. Medaglia d'Oro out of a Street Sense mare. I mean, it's another Godolphin homebred.
Medaglia d'Oro filly in the Kentucky Oaks. Where have we seen that before? that sire. Like, it's funny because people say, "Oh, if it's a Medaglia d'Oro, it's in the Oaks. It's probably a good thing." And that seems to be the longstanding trend here. But shout out to the horses who came in behind her. Drexel Hill was a massive price, and just tough as they come, salt of the earth, tried so hard to get up there. Same thing for Bless the Broken for trainer Will Walden. She picked up third, and I believe this was his first Kentucky Oaks starter as well. There's a lot of trainers.
His first Oaks starter, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, to hit the board when this is your first year in, when you have operations like Godolphin, where this is what they've been pointing for entire generations, and it's like, that's an accomplishment, and I hope that they celebrated really, really well afterwards, because that's not it's not an easy thing to do. But I see him over there doing something. So listeners, you're stuck with me until he comes back.
All right. I have a 16-year-old dog that time to go out. When she says it's time to go out, it's time to go out.
Mm-hmm. That's how that goes. Well, and then time to continue then with our, discussion of the classics. They also, in Newmarket in England, picked up the 1,000 guineas and the 2,000 guineas, which, to simplify it and not go too much into the history and all that fun stuff, it's basically the Derby and the Oaks equivalent in England. It's just much older than ours is. And Godolphin picked up both of those as well with Desert Flower, the filly who won the 1,000 guineas, and then Ruling Court who won the 2,000 guineas. And it was, I think, the funniest thing for me is some of the commentary between the trainers, because Charlie Appleby trains a lot of their international contingent. You see him lately for the Breeders' Cup, for the World Cup. Like, you see him all over the world right now with Godolphin. Like, he's their head trainer. And it was funny. It was funny how some of the commentary between the trainers, where Charlie said that he called the American team after they won both the Oaks and the Derby, and he goes, "Well, thanks for putting on the pressure, guys." I mean, that has to be. It's like when you see that, it's like everybody kind of before you got it done, and now you've got this one more, you know, this post you have to clear. I imagine pressure was on, all things considered. Nothing like hearing, "Well, we're 3 for 3, so no, don't mess it up for the rest of us." But yeah,
again, it's just, we'll never see anything like that again.
No,
it'll never happen. I at least in my lifetime, that will never happen again. And if it does, I'm just going to bow out.
Okay,
we're selling out.
All right, well, listeners, take notes. Something happens, check on Jared. First person you need to go look at. All righty. Well, I think that's all we have to say. It was just such an incredible weekend all around, and it was, again, that incredible, incredible achievement to win 4 spring classics in one weekend. It's one thing to win, you know, once 4 times in a, you know, 4 years in a row, but 4, one behind the other, is, we can't underscore how incredible that is. But
I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with Sovereignty next. I'm as a selfish racing fan, I hope he goes to the Preakness and then on to the Belmont. Of course, Belmont, that's not exactly the best race for closers, but I'd still love to see would love to see that duo get themselves a triple crown. That would be amazing. But sound like they're completely sold on.
Well, I was going to say, I think as of the most recent report that I saw on TDN or somewhere this morning, that I think it said that Bill was not, he, like, obviously no one's going to pressure Bill into doing anything. Bill Mott operates at the beat of his own drum. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you're, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Can't argue with success. But from what I've read, he's not entirely 100% ready to commit to anything yet, which we all kind of knew was going to happen.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he'll take his time and make sure it's the right situation. And if it is, then we'll see it. And hopefully we'll see him up there and get to chat with we'll get Dave up there with his microphone and get to see if we can get a little chat in with Junior before the Preakness, assuming he does run.
So. Speaking of Dave, and Dave, don't hate me for saying this. Did you see the video where Dave's elbow turned off the TV right as the gates
turned
opened?
Off the TV. Didn't get to see it. He said that's the reason Junior won, because he didn't get to watch the race.
So his trend of being, by virtue of being occasional bad luck, he's extraordinarily good luck. Because, like, every time this happens, every time he doesn't watch, every time his plane gets rerouted somewhere, every time Dave has bad luck, we have good luck. And this is, it is a weird thing, Dave, but we love you for it.
Yeah, so really, I don't know if I want Dave to come into Baltimore on Preakness weekend to watch Irish racing and Oscar season. We might need to see if we can mess with his car or something.
Somebody call ATC. Alrighty. No, seriously, we're just joking, Dave. We love you. We promise. But anyway, thanks everybody for jumping in with us as we kind of get our feet wet and get our return to the airwaves out of the way here. And I'll probably drop this on Wednesday, so happy Wednesday. And I've almost forgotten my own closing words.
Make good choices.
Yes, make good choices. Apparently make them as good as Jared did. And bet sovereignty across the board. All right, everybody. Behave yourselves. Have a happy Wednesday. Have a good Wednesday. Make good choices. And the podcast is out.